You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 468 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you in different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Brenton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
The who now?
Seattle Seahawks.
You know what I just realized? We have no toast this week.
No toasts?
I know.
This is the first ever Oops No Toast podcast.
I'm sure something toast-worthy
happened. How bad of a week did it have to be to just be like, no toasts?
It wasn't a great week, but yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to throw in here, Neko Ogumike, I believe, moved into eighth in, that was in steals in WNBA history.
Oh, you always remember eighth in steals in WNBA history.
She's now
a toast to that.
She's now in the top 10 in steals, points, and rebounds, I believe, in WNBA history, which is pretty good. So, there you go.
I feel like I have to come up with something to toast to. I got nothing.
The hottest day of the year? You toasted to that?
It was another shit week in another shit country. Well, I guess let's just move on.
Well, you could say that this is... I mean, I'm not ready to toast to this just yet, but we're moving towards... progressing towards a toast here, because it's time for our NBA Seattle update, sponsored by Pagliacci Pizza. Last Thursday before game one of the NBA Finals.
You did
finals.
That intro like we have like a drop-in for it.
Time to my drop-in money.
The children hearing the intro to Mariners Hot Takes, they're like, what the hell is this? And I'm like, it's genius. It's what it is. It's like low quality. Anyway, I love that you introed the NBA Seattle update. Maybe if we do it enough, we'll get an intro for it.
I don't. I'm not adding more editing to my plate.
How much? Sorry, so sorry that this editing takes so much time.
How much of the editing are you doing again?
I'm MVP? Sorry, only carrying the podcast every week that I don't edit also after. Yeah.
We're going to talk about carrying some teams later in this podcast. So last Thursday, before the start of the NBA Finals, Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, gave his annual press conference there, was asked two questions about expansion. Let me read you those questions and answers. First up, what is the current temperature among the Board of Governors to expand the NBA, whether it's Seattle or another American city? What have you found in your committees so far?
Not a non-American city, specifically an American city. Who asked this question? Was it Chris Daniels?
No, there were no Seattle reporters here. This was a national reporter.
Okay.
It was interesting that they singled out
who
Seattle.
Who hates the rest of the world?
I think they were distinguishing it. The idea was to distinguish it from European expansion, which Adam Silver also addressed in his answer, but I've cut that part of it out since it's not specifically relevant to us. His response... Yeah, sure. Let me answer expansion two ways. One, there is, of course, expansion of current NBA teams. There, I'd say the current sense is we should be exploring it. I don't think it's automatic because it depends on your perspective on the future of the league. As I've said before, expansion in a way is selling equity in the league. If you believe in the league, you don't necessarily want to add partners. On the other hand, we recognize there are underserved markets in the United States and elsewhere. I think markets that deserve to have NBA teams, probably even if we were to expand more than we can serve. We have an owners' meeting in July in Las Vegas. It will be on the agenda to take the temperature of the room. We have committees that are already talking about it, but my sense is at that meeting, they're going to give direction to me and my colleagues at the league office that we should continue to explore it. And then the second question from my ESPN colleague, Tim Bontemps. Obviously, expansion has been a topic that has been discussed for a while. You said it's going to be an official topic next month. When you say you expect the recommendation to be to explore it further, do you think there will be a formalized process of really actively engaging in what that would look like, or is it something different? To that, Silver replied, What I expect is if a decision is made that there should be further exploration by the league office and presumably a committee of team owners, it would be more of a formal process. There's been no lack of interest. Certainly, I've gotten a lot of unsolicited calls. I essentially have said to people from several different cities, we're just not engaging in that process right now. I want to be fair to everyone, so I don't want to have meeting with some and not others. So if we were to say yes, we're now going to move into a more formal exploratory phase. We would take those meetings. In addition, likely we would engage with outside advisors who would look at markets, look at economic opportunities and media opportunities, etc. I'll just add, I've said this before, one of the factors in terms of potential expansion is local media. We do need to figure out something there. I mean, for the league, we have several of our team regional networks have actually shut down. Others have recently come out of bankruptcy. Others seem to be teetering. We're going through a team transition in media. And then he went on to talk about local media deals a bit more. But this is the most clarity we've gotten. Certainly, you listen to, more of a formal process and, let's see. Oh, presumably a committee of team owners. That seems to indicate that Adam Silver expects that they will get the go-ahead at the July Board of Governors meetings that's held at the NBA Summer League in Las Vegas to form an expansion committee, which, obviously is a step they have not undertaken since they last expanded the league.
And when they have done this in the past, have they generally ended at the conclusion of expansion? Yes.
I don't think there's a case. I mean, I don't know the history perfectly. I don't think there's a case where they have cons like gone to the point of considering possible cities for expansion and then decided not to expand. So I do think Silver wants to leave the door open, even if they form this expansion committee. Look, you never know what's going to happen in the economy. There are certain known unknowns out there right now, let's say, that affect the economy. The tide could change for some reason, but this continues to be actual. This is discussion of actual tangible progress towards the outcome of expansion.
Okay. I mean, that seems positive. There's a lot of parsing the language here, and it's a little bit more definitive language than I feel like we've gotten, but
Right.
it's also the most vague language that any human being could ever utter.
Adam Silver
That,
is a trained lawyer. I think
I
that's
mean,
important to remember.
it's almost exhausting hearing these answers, but reading through the lines, he is saying as clearly as Adam Silver could say that he thinks they're going to have a conversation. And he has a general sense that they're probably going to get to the place of forming a committee to explore expansion. Would you agree
Yes.
with that?
Yes, that's my read of it. And I think a couple of the things that are notable are the things that he did not say are slowing that process down at this point. And those are, number one, was we talked about before the last time that there was an update on an expansion right before the announcement that the Portland Trailblazers were for sale. That's not going to slow this process down. And as we talked about at the time, the difference between this and the sale of the Boston Celtics is the sale of the Celtics, for the largest valuation ever for an NBA team, had a chance to increase the value. The Portland sale is probably not going to increase the value, and it's not going to decrease the value either. It's probably not going to have an impact either way because the Blazers are not as valuable as an expansion franchise in either Seattle or Las Vegas. And then the second aspect is, again, the economic uncertainty that is not preventing them from moving forward with this process at this point.
Yeah, I
So
mean,
again, we don't
the
know what's
only
going to
question mark he
happen.
raised is just these local TV deals, which you're kind of getting down to. Like, there's always a question mark. There's never going to be a time where the league is perfect. It's like we have the exact cities that we want. We have the exact players that we want around the league. We have the exact, climate within the country.
We have a Lakers versus Lakers final.
Lakers Celtics maybe. Like
No,
those,
the joke is that David Stern was asked what his perfect finals matchup would be
and he
and said
said
Lakers
Lakers versus
versus
Lakers.
Lakers. Yes.
Is that true?
It could be apocryphal, but it's too
He's
good
like, we
not to
want the
use.
biggest market teams in the finals, and then teams also in the smallest markets possible. That's what David Stern wants.
Apparently this was in 2004.
Oh, very nice, very nice. I think it's probably bullshit, to be honest. That's my guess. Unless you find an exact quote from David Stern, I think it's bullshit. But also, who cares what he says? What are you hearing as much as you're able to say behind the scenes? Or I'm going to ask you the same question that was asked of Adam Silver, which is, what is the temperature? From conversations that you're hearing about sort of within people who are involved in the league, what does the temperature seem to be?
I mean, I'm not talking to NBA owners as frequently as you might suspect, but...
But, like, you know people who are hearing chatter, right? Does it seem like things are trending in the right direction? Because I think it was about 9 months ago, you sort of had a bit of a damper on the mood with regards to expansion.
Well, it was more recently than 9 months ago, because it was about 9 months ago that we wrote our story in our series, did our mock expansion draft. So we were feeling pretty positive about the chances of that at that point. And then I think it was, you know, subsequent to that, with the Celtics sale drawing out and that sort of thing, that... There did seem to be a sense of cooling. I mean, I will know more at Summer League, I would say, as we all will, because that's where this meeting will happen. But I haven't heard anything that would contradict our analysis of our parsing of what Adam Silver said.
Okay. I mean, it's positive news. What do you think the timeline is then? So let's say that this summer the committee gets formed. In whatever, maybe they agree in July to start forming a committee, and then maybe a committee is formed in October.
And they form a committee to make a committee. I think the committee could be formed between these Board of Governors meetings. So the Board of Governors meetings occur, as you alluded to, July, October. There's one, I think there is a winter quarter one, but I'm not sure when that is, possibly February, and then April. Or the Board of Governors meetings. And I do think the committee could be formed outside of those meetings or in between those, potentially. But my suspicion is it's probably somewhere in the range of a year where you go from an expansion committee to, we have selected cities and ownership groups. Like, we're talking
it
about
could
that.
Be next summer, summer 2026.
Next summer, like next Seattle. Fall would be a realistic timeline.
Fall either, 2026.
Either, yes. So either July 2026 at that Board of Governors meetings, or October 2026. Those, I think, are the realistic times where this could
what
be
is
voted
the timeline
on.
After that?
I think 2 years.
So if everything continues exactly the way things seem to be trending, the wind blows the right way, there's basketball being played in Seattle starting in 2028-29 season.
I think that is a plausible timeline.
Wow. I mean, that's not that long from now overall.
It is not.
I mean, also considering just how long we've waited.
Exactly.
I do think, I mean, I've talked about my interest in NBA basketball, I think, has waned from where it was. You know, you just get gut punched so many times. And honestly, if it happens this time, I might be done forever. You know what I mean? It might be like, I'm good on NBA basketball.
If I can remind you of something.
What?
It's called the Pelton Cast Golden Rule.
Well, if it doesn't happen this time, then the question you have to ask yourself is when.
Right.
Because there's not going to come like I said earlier, there's not going to be a perfect time. At some point, you either have to do it or you don't. So if it doesn't happen now, you kind of get to, is it another 2 years after that? Is it another 4 years? Is it another 6 years? So it does feel like this is, aside from when there was the sale of the Kings that David Stern shut down, this is the most likely time for expansion to Seattle.
Without question. This is the most likely time for the return of the NBA to Seattle.
Yeah.
Since obviously that wasn't an expansion process. Yeah. I mean, if they don't expand now, you start to wonder, will it ever happen? I think that's fair. If that were the case, I think you would start to get to the point where it would be more likely that the NBA returned to Seattle via a move. But
okay.
Hopefully we won't get to that point, because we don't want that to happen to another city.
Okay. Well, so, this is positive news.
Yeah.
As long as we're not toasting to it.
Let's move directly from the positive news to your favorite segment with a twist this week.
Don't burn yourself We got Mariner's hot takes coming at ya.
That's right, because I'm doing the takes. Tristan's too busy watching children's baseball to watch the Mariners play baseball at the caliber of little leaguers. Cal Raleigh can't stop hitting home runs, and the Mariners can't stop losing. There's only one obvious conclusion here. The big dumper needs to request a ride out of town. When Cal finally got his first full day off of the season on Sunday, and the Mariners won anyway, it was their first win without a Cal homer since May 19th.
Oh my God.
I'm no Alex Meyer, but here's my game losing stat of the day. The next two players behind Cal and homers, Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge, have scored an average of 64.5 runs this season. Cal has scored 44, meaning he's driven himself in on his 26 home runs 8 more times than every other player on the roster has combined. In fact, according to StatHead.com, only two players in baseball history have ever scored fewer runs in a season with at least 26 home runs than Cal has thus far. Jay Bruce, when fittingly he spent part of the season with the Mariners in 2019, obviously not a thing I remember, and Matt Davidson in 2017. But you know, baseball history isn't very long in the grand scheme of things. Anyways, Ohtani's protection in the lineup is Mookie Betts. Judge has hit in front of Cody Bellinger, a pair of MVPs. Cal's hitting in front of Randy Arozarena with Rowdy Tellez two batters away most times he comes to the plate. Sure, opponents are pitching to Cal now, but how long will that continue? Look, we know how much it meant for Cal to end the drought with his walk-off homer in 2022, but if you want more moments like that, they'll have to come elsewhere. Look at Randy Johnson, who was in the booth on Tuesday night in Phoenix. Johnson might want to remind Mariners fans that he didn't ask for a trade, but let's be clear, leaving Seattle was the best thing that ever happened to him. If the big unit hadn't gone to Arizona and won a World Series, he'd be just another 6'11" Cy Young winner slash euphemism, forgotten to history everywhere outside Seattle. Or consider Ohtani, who wasted so much of his time with the Angels. Before last year, he hadn't even met the necessary minimum for a statue outside T-Mobile Park by playing in the ALCS. Do you think Shohei ever puts on an Angels game on TV and wishes he was still playing in Anaheim? I doubt it. Look, would there be some hard feelings if Cal asked for a trade given everything he's meant to Seattle and vice versa? Certainly so. But that happened when Ken Griffey Jr. wanted out too. And while the balanced schedule means Raleigh would have to come back to T-Mobile Park before the bitterness had worn off and they were ready to give him a standing ovation, we'd always be waiting for a reunion in his twilight years. Real Mariners fans would know better than to complain if Cal asked for a trade. If you truly love something, set it free. So fly away, Cal, to a team worthy of your torpedo bat talent.
Wow! Not a take I was expecting.
I'd like to keep people on their toes.
Honestly, incredible. I mean, when you talk about the package for Kyle Raleigh, I understand he's already been tied up for a number of years. But the deal, when you look at it, like the Mariners signed Cal at the exact right time.
Yes.
If they go to him after, which we'll know, I mean, it's still June, but like if they go to him after this offseason and try to negotiate, right? Wasn't it Scott Boras who's his agent? Or did he fire Boras?
He changed agents, but I don't think it would be firing Scott Boras. He did. Yeah, I guess so. Excel Sports Management.
He fired Scott Boras. If he has that conversation, if he has Scott Boras as his agent and this season, the conversation between the Mariners and Cal Raleigh does not even start. They don't even bother having the conversation with him. So the Mariners really locked him up at the exact right time, and it does look like a freaking steal to have a catcher.
An enormous steal.
Which, I mean, I guess kudos to the Mariners, but like, it does also mean that his value on the trade market would be pretty high. You don't get those sweet, sweet team control years, but you do have Cal locked up.
I don't think you're viewing this from the right perspective. I'm not viewing this as the Seattle Mariners should be looking to trade Cal. My point is Cal should be looking to get himself
all
to
parties.
The game.
It all makes sense to me. I was like, yep, that checks out. Go get a Juan Soto deal for Cal.
You made this a little too logical.
I mean,
was a hot take.
You stated all facts. What is more likely for the Mariners find somebody better to hit two players behind Cal or to trade Cal and try to get good players? Because they're not finding that player.
You know, I did use stats in a misleading manner in this argument. That is part of the hot take joke here.
You still did say that Rowdy Tellez was hitting two batters behind
did.
Cal Raleigh, which
That
is correct
was
information.
accurate. Yes. Accurate in totality.
They hadn't won a game. So
All the
they
games in
haven't.
which they'd won, Cal had hit a home run.
And they haven't won a game when Cal didn't hit a home run and was in the lineup since May 19th.
Correct.
That was a really long time ago.
I'm aware I lived
I
in
was younger then.
the, I guess I did not live in a different house at that point, but I had not been in the current house I'm in for very long.
Wow, that is an incredible stat.
You were a year younger than, so was Eric Young Jr., who we discovered today shares your exact birthday.
Really? The same year and everything? Wow.
That was
That's
part of my
crazy
discovering that
because
Eric Young
he's
Jr.
old, but I'm young somehow.
Weird. It was part of
Despite his last name.
my discovering that Eric Young Jr. and Eric Young Sr. Like, I had heard the story when they talked about them both coaching first base over the weekend when the Mariners faced the Angels. But in my mind, Eric Young Jr. was still the guy who played for the Rockies, and Eric Young Sr. must have been like 80 or something. So we're all learning things. We are
Okay,
all learning.
what's going on with this horrible team right now?
Well, they've lost 7 of their last 8 games. So
Oh, God.
conveniently, the surprising thing, the one stat I looked up that did not prove interesting was most home runs in losses. Aaron Judge actually has the most home runs and losses this
Just
season.
if you have a lot of home runs, you're going to have a lot of home runs and losses.
I mean, Cal has a significantly lower percentage of his home runs and losses than Aaron Judge does. It's just that the Yankees manage to win a lot more frequently, even when Aaron Judge doesn't homer. So, Fangraph playoff odds were down to 53% before tonight's game.
They should have just dropped
After,
him down to zero after this game.
still at 51, still better than 50-50, 30% to win the division.
It's something. I mean, the way that I think about playoff odds is we always look at it when they're good, but it is also important to look at it when they're bad.
They don't
And
change as much as the vibes change.
I think the most frustrating piece of this skid is the teams that they've done it against. And, it's three teams that were, when you look at the Orioles and the Angels and now the Diamondbacks, it was three teams that were all under 500 and that the Mariners can't win these games and are on the precipice of being swept again.
Well, specifically, like, were teams that were having very disappointing seasons themselves. I mean, not
Yes.
the Angels, really. There wasn't expectations for them, but
I mean, the Orioles and the Diamondbacks have talent, obviously. The two triples from Corbin Carroll. Like, Corbin Carroll is definitely kind of like mirror image of Cal right now for what he's doing in Arizona, but it does seem like they're
Josh Naylor
hitting.
also is pretty terrifying when he comes up to the plate.
The Diamondbacks are hitting in a way, but for the Mariners, statistically, the bats aren't the problem.
All right, I went through this before today's game. Entry today's game, still 7th in WRC plus on Fangraphs. Not as good the offense in terms of the non-hitting things. They're 23rd in base running, 24th in defense. I was prepared to blame the base running on Dan Wilson, but it turns out they were 23rd and or 22nd or whatever it was in base running 2 years ago under Scott Servais as well. So, it is what it
What does
is.
base running mean?
It's stolen bases, caught stealings, and I believe outs made on the base paths.
Okay. I'm shocked that they're not last in this because they make so many outs in the base paths. I think they've slowed down a little bit. I think everybody slowed their roll on a lot of these things.
It's not great for my hot takes or my hot takes, my bold predictions, but we'll address that at a later point. They are 19th in pitching WAR. The starters are 15th. The relievers are 23rd. So, this is something that friend of the pod, Zach Jabal, brought up in the Discord that, Mariners having league average starting pitching, just not part of the equation. And injuries are a factor in that. But the starters who have been healthy have just simply not been as effective, I think, generally as we hoped they would be.
I'm going to also throw this out there. I think it is still part of it. Yes, George Kirby has made a couple of starts and been bad before this weekend. George Kirby wasn't back yet.
No, I'm not. I'm like, the injuries are a huge part of it, without question. I'm just saying, even if you look at the pitchers who have been healthy all season, I don't think that they have performed quite as well as people would have expected. Partially their expectations were probably too high due to the same park effects that made people too low on the hitting coming into the season. But Luis Castillo, like, you want him to be the guy who's out there stopping losing streaks like this, and he didn't do it. George Kirby did pitch an awesome game on Sunday and managed to get a win in the midst of this.
I
But
mean, I think Wu is the one who you kind of look to. Castillo's been pretty good.
he's been pretty good again.
But
He
that's not the
hasn't.
thing. The way that this that we talked preseason or whatever about this, I mean, this was obviously the George Kirby injury aside, was Kirby and Gilbert are still 1 and 2. And if Kirby and Gilbert are 1 and 2, Castillo and Wu are 3 and 4, it's still an incredible rotation.
Oh, I agree with that, yes.
It is an unbelievable rotation, and the production that they've gotten from Wu and Castillo has been excellent for your number 3 and 4 starters. The problem is they haven't had everybody healthy all at once. And I do think that's
But
part of
I also think, like, they mentioned this on the broadcast tonight, and I think, like, the idea of having all 5 year starters healthy at once, what happened last year, that's the outlier, not the other way around. Like, pitching injuries are the way of life.
I agree with that information, but also we're, I mean, Bryce Miller is going back to the injured list, obviously, and who knows about the rest of Bryce Miller's season. I
How many
think,
aces are we at?
well, Kirby's back.
Agreed.
Wu, Castillo, Kirby. I'm still giving Logan Evans.
It wasn't really an ace-worthy start, I wouldn't say today.
I mean, Kirby definitely put himself into ace territory again on Sunday.
100%.
It was a classic Kirby performance.
15 strikeouts, no walks, one of the lowest pitch totals in a 15 strikeout game on record. All around amazing.
Despite all of these stats that you're talking about and the WRC plus where they're at right now, I don't know if this will completely flip by the end of the season, but I still have more faith in the pitching staff than I do in the hitting.
I think that's probably reasonable given it's still only been 2 months. Given the health should be somewhat better for the starting pitching going forward. The starters, yes. The relievers, pretty shaky right now, I would say. And they're 23rd in bullpen war. This is a big factor in this, despite how awesome Andrés Muñoz has been thus far.
I mean, I think it was more like, the Baltimore series, the Minnesota series. It's like 2 runs, 1 run, 2 runs. Those were at home against the Angels. Got kind of knocked around. I think Miller is kind of needing to go. Obviously, he was needing to go to the IL. I'm like the least overreacting to the Mariners that you could possibly be. This stretch sucks, and I think the problem is that and this is not a problem for the team. It's hard to maintain interest in the Mariners right now with what they're doing. This is the hard part of if there's a difficulty to be a baseball fan.
I don't feel like that's what certainly not the Discord is having a hard time maintaining interest in the Mariners. It's having maintaining faith in the Mariners. And I do
Sure,
think.
yes, maintaining faith. But I still have complete faith in this Mariners team. Put it on the record that on June 10th at 10:59 p.m. that I still have faith, like that 51% playoff odds. I'm like, this team is making the playoffs. There is no doubt in my mind that this Mariners team is making the playoffs. And even after, this 2 months where they're exactly 500, this is a better than 500 team. And I think they are probably closer to the peaks that they had earlier in the season, the amount of series that they won, than they are to where they're at right now. This is knowing that Logan Gilbert is coming back. This is knowing that George Kirby, hopefully, is back to being George Kirby again. They can withstand a Bryce Miller injury.
They can, especially if Emerson Hancock continues to pitch credibly, which I would say he does, and he'll presumably maintain his rotation spot. So Logan Evans started Tuesday in place of Miller, as you mentioned, 2 weeks after being sent down. But Logan Gilbert made his fourth and presumably final rehab start Tuesday for AAA Tacoma, throwing 5 scoreless innings of 1-hit ball on 72 pitches at Sacramento. The update on Bryce Miller. Dan Wilson told reporters the cortisone shot he received didn't help as much as the Mariners hoped. He then met with a doctor Tuesday. Will see receive a platelet-rich plasma injection. Won't throw for 2 weeks with the hope of returning as soon as 4 weeks. But possibly a 4 to 6 week timetable if things go well. So I'm wondering whether it's worth it to make a wager with you on the Mariners, but I don't know how we can get odds on the types of bets that we make on this podcast.
The on the playoffs?
Yeah, he's doing it at even odds doesn't make sense for me because they are still better than 50-50 at Fangraphs.
The Julio of it all, though, is a little bit fascinating to me because I was looking at his splits and I was just like, Julio's been playing so badly right now.
You were especially angry about this after the game we attended last Thursday.
I'm not convinced that Julio Rodriguez is a good player. But I was looking at it and I was like, oh, batting average, not bad. Like last 7 days, would you like to guess what his batting average is? Basically during the skid. Let's do the last 14 days.
285.
315.
Okay.
He's batting over 300. Would you like to guess how many walks he has during that time period?
Two.
One single walk in those days. Would you like to guess how many home runs he has during that time period?
One.
One home run. Julio Rodriguez has morphed into Ichiro somehow in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, but he's playing center field is the
It's
key difference here.
in
And
2025, the batting average is incredible, right?
yes, relative to ERA, it is probably a similarly good batting average.
But the OPS at 747 is not going to cut it. You can't have a Julio with no zero doubles in the last 14 days. One triple, one home run.
It's not.
Which, granted, I think they're trying to get him right a little bit, but the amount of strikeouts with that other setup, it's kind of like, how does this all make sense? How are you striking out this much and hitting singles but not hitting for power? It's probably just randomness what it would end at, but
But
that's
here,
why the Cal piece is more complicated because you have a player who struck out 13 times in 14 days right behind him. I'm honestly shocked it's not more, but his plate discipline has been terrible.
here's the part of the equation that you're missing, though, is like Julio's been solid offensively this season, but Julio's been extremely good defensively, where he ranks
Yes.
10th in defensive value on Fangraphs. And that's why he remains a very good player. He is in WAR 24th in Major League Baseball. Julio is going to be fine. Not worried about Julio.
Are we going to talk about the player who was playing next to him in the outfield who was not solid defensively?
Yes, because we saw the end of a short-lived hero. How did you describe it again on the Discord?
Oh, and all time, let's remember some guys,
We'll
right?
always have the month that
I
Leody
literally
Taveras
said,
played for the
I literally
Mariners.
said when the Mariners signed Victor Robles, I will never forget this. I was like, he will be such a fun guy to remember in the future. And
Yeah.
then Victor Robles was good for the rest of the season. The jury's still out. Time is the greatest hater, as one knows.
But
I'm
still,
not,
multiple seasons with the
yeah,
team.
no,
We're going to remember
Victor
Victor
Robles,
Robles at this point.
Leody Taveras is what I thought Victor Robles would be
That
this season.
is accurate. Yeah, minus 0.6 WAR, 174, 198, 272 slash line. And even though part of the appeal here was, well, here's a guy who can also play backup center field, given that his history there, and he should be a plus defender if you move him to right. And instead, it just went horribly defensively in
I
right
think
field.
people were lying to us. Or is it just you think it's the move to right field?
Well, he came in center field and wasn't so great when Julio left Sunday's game, which is the other thing that, to your whole, oh, Julio sucks,
Oh,
bluster
no.
after Thursday's
How about
game.
this? How about this? The heart knows what the heart wants. And when I saw that Julio was injured, I was still legitimately like, oh, fuck. You know what I
Exactly.
mean?
And the rest of that game, it left such a huge hole in the order to have right before, I guess Cal wasn't in the lineup either. And then you've got in the three hole, JP Crawford gets on base or something, and you're like, oh, and now Leody Taveras is up.
He wasn't, he's like, he had a 0.8 defensive WAR 2023, negative in 2024, negative in 2022. Like, I feel like maybe it was the team overselling his defense a little bit.
Well, usually you're going to get better defensively when you go from center to right. But the
I mean, he was
important.
completely lost out there. I saw like a clip of all of the plays that he misplayed in right field in just a month. It is shocking how many of them there were. And the whole time, that Leody Tavares was out there. I was like, are we forgetting about, I hate to use this nickname, but the Italian Stallion down in AAA and Dominic Canzone? What did Dominic Canzone ever do wrong except for his stats last season?
Well, what he didn't do wrong is pinch hitting in the ninth inning last night and hitting a game-tying two-run homer. I guess Trent Thornton Vargas might think that he did something wrong with that home run, but a very exciting return to the major leagues. Had another hit on Tuesday night, getting the start in right field this time. So very exciting to have Canzone back and enjoying this revenge series against the Diamondbacks team that cast him aside in favor of Paul Sewald. There you go.
I do
To the
think
Mariners.
We do have to take a step back and look at some of the other mistakes, though. You know, like Jerry DePoto gets criticized quite a bit, and I would like to offer that he's not been criticized enough.
Wow. Okay.
For one decision and one decision only.
Is that how well Sam Haggerty is playing?
How do you let Sam Haggerty go? As a proud Italian, Jerry, what are you doing? I understand you had to call up Canzone. Look, you tried Tommy La Stella at DH. How do you let Haggerty go?
What if the Mariners traded for Haggerty at the deadline?
I mean, that would be incredible if they traded for Haggerty at the deadline. To a division rival.
Wow.
Of all else, come on.
Does he have a better
Jerry.
Slugging than Julio this season?
He's close. His OPS is close.
Troublingly close, one might say.
He doesn't really walk that much either. But, I mean, it's a 702 OPS. I think Julio, what was Julio for the season? 729.
Yeah.
They're in the same territory.
412 slugging versus 391.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, there you go.
Anyway, it was a brutal one tonight.
Yeah.
It was not a fun watch. Seeing the Randy and Rowdy go back to back, though, I'm like, Randy
Whoa.
And Rowdy, like that, it could be a thing if either of them was good.
Oh, that's too harsh.
On which one?
Randy. Randy Tellez has 0.7, negative 0.7 war.
Oh, that's too harsh on the sport of baseball.
Rosarena is still a solid 2 war, yeah.
No, I like Randy Rosarena.
I mean, I'm just saying he's not as good as Cody Bellinger and who's it? Oh, Mookie Betts. Yes.
Mookie
he's
Betts.
Not quite in their ballpark as a player, with all due respect to Randy Rosarena. I had written the Cal hot takes, and then those home runs happened. I'm like, are the vibe's going to shift on me here? And then they gave up the 3-run over at the bottom of the sixth, and Trent Thornton gave up the 3-run over, and I was like, nope, I'm going to take the dogs for a walk. So there you go.
I had it on the radio while you're driving, and it was like, I can't remember who was doing the broad. Maybe it was Gary Hill, right? That's the dude. It was like fourth straight hit to begin the sixth or the seventh or whatever, and I just turned it off and I never looked back.
No regrets. Well, speaking of turning it off and never looking back, let's get into the roundup.
Oh God.
No, we actually have some exciting news here.
Do we? If it's about the Sounders, I'm just gonna go on the record that I don't care.
It is not exciting news
okay,
about the Sounders.
Thank God.
The news about the Sounders is that the prices for the Club World Cup continue to drop. Not for the team, for the tickets. The Kraken let go of assistant coach Dave Lowry and goaltending coach Steve Breer Monday before the introductory press conference for new head coach Lane Lambert. Both were holdovers from Dave Haxtell's coaching staff, who remained last season under Dan Bylsma during his 1 year at the helm.
I mean, you're calling this exciting news? Shots fired
this
at Dave Lowry and Steve Breer.
This is not the exciting news.
I thought the goaltending coaching was pretty good for the team overall.
I'll let you know when we get to the exciting news. I mean, look, Chris Drieger has been awesome. So, yeah, so I don't think this is a statement on them as coaches. It's more just an assistant coach.
I somehow miss hockey season.
Wants to bring in his own assistants. But Bylsma's addition to the staff, Jessica Campbell, will return, as the organization previously announced when Bylsma was fired. The exciting news comes from our friends at PWHL Seattle.
Hello.
Began filling their roster by signing USA Women's Hockey captain Hillary Knight. As part of a maximum of 5 unprotected players the team could sign before drafting 7 players in Monday's expansion draft.
Wow, they got Hillary Knight?
Knight is 35 and has announced plans to retire from the international competition after the Young Cupping Winter Olympics, which will be her fifth, where she's produced a gold and three silvers to date. She's currently second in Olympic scoring for the U.S., has a chance to become the all-time leader in Milano, still shared the PWOHL points leader award last season at age 35 with 29. Like, this is one of the great women's hockey players of all time who's going to be part of the inaugural season here in Seattle. This is very exciting.
Wow, that's awesome.
You haven't watched enough Olympic hockey, clearly. Or attended the USA Canada game that I attended at Climate Pledge Arena. Seattle also
You
signed
did
USA.
what? Tell me these things that you've been doing.
I don't know if I watched that much Olympic hockey, but I did attend a USA Canada game in the whatever they called that series that they played a couple of years ago. I went at Climate Pledge Arena.
Really?
Yeah, it
Did
was
you buy
fun.
tickets or go on a press pass?
Neither I was offered a ticket to the game and went with a friend. So Seattle also signed USA International's Alex Carpenter, who's third in points overall through the two seasons of the PWHL, as well as defender Caleb Barnes. And while Knight is at the tail end of her career, PWHL Seattle also brought in considerable youth with four of the six first-round picks from last year's entry draft, highlighted by number two pick Daniel Sardokny. So it's a two timetables situation here for PWHL Seattle. They've got Hillary Knight to sell the tickets now, be the face of the franchise as they start out here. But also, bullies. I don't know how. Like, I didn't really research what the protection rules were
How many
for the
teams are there in the
PWHL
league?
draft. There were six previously, two expansion franchises coming in with Seattle and Vancouver this year. But why all of last year's first round picks, almost none of them were protected, is a little perplexing to me for Seattle to be able to get four of the six.
Okay, so these they don't have the draft picks. They have the players who were selected with these picks.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. They just have their own natural draft picks in the upcoming
Got it.
entry draft. But Caleb Barnes, who's already playing for the U.S. Women's hockey team, was one of these first round picks last year. They also added.
This
So,
is like a 2K season, like 10 years into the franchise mode. And when you're just
correct.
like, I just have four of the top six picks, it's normal. Don't worry about it.
So, very excited to see how that continues to play out. I have not yet hired a coach, so that's still coming. And obviously, we'll get name and logo at some point here. And unless they're going to go with Seattle Hockey Club for the first season.
I'm for it, for what it's worth.
Don't mind it. All right, Seattle Sounders. It went from bad to worse last Sunday.
Good.
Playing.
Good. I'm cheering. I have moved to cheering against the Sounders.
I think it's unfair to hold it against the players.
I guess I agree, but I want the players are not going to be affected on an individual basis from loss of profits for the team. Does that make sense?
I suppose.
The players have guaranteed contracts. The variable here is the ticket sales, the merchandise, all of the other stuff.
Mean, there aren't such a thing as playoff bonuses, so.
Sure, fine. I'll accept that. But who do you think makes more money in this situation with playoffs?
I agree
After
that they might
understanding
more.
what happened, who's making more money for the playoffs? It's not the players right
I
now.
get it. I'm just saying they
I'm
get
not
some of
cheering
it.
against the individual players, but to
I
me, even
understand it.
having the team on the roundup at this point, when Adrian Hanauer is basically like, I don't give a shit about these players, right? And their profits. To me, it's like, I don't understand the point of supporting the club at all. Like,
I
even
mean,
lying to us, I understand. Like, it's all capitalism. I get it. I understand how professional sports works.
to be clear, Adrian Hanauer himself does not have control over. We'll get to the discussion of the FIFA Club World Cup revenue in a second here. Adrian Hanauer himself does not control that. We don't know that he's an obstacle in any way in this regard.
But
But
he's
still,
still
his
the one who
response
gave
to
the
their.
expletive-laden tirade at the players themselves.
Correct.
To me, what a
Which
good
again was
boss does is def
unacceptable.
constantly, constantly defends their employees, right? Which is what this is. And that is not what that was. That was going in and yelling at your employees, swearing at them, something like that. Like, if you think about that as a boss, where it's like, if your team, your staff, or whatever is like, we deserve a raise from this bonus that happened, and then you come in and scream and swear at them, how is anybody else going to support that person, right?
I do want to be clear that expletives in a sports setting are sometimes different than in a non-sports setting. We are not going to have more updates this week on the swear heard around the world, although the Storm have acknowledged that the WNBA is looking into it.
Swear heard around the world. It's a different thing, though. There's a different thing between
I
one swear
agree.
word between a staff and a player and your actual boss, right? That
Again,
is
it's
two
an
people who are
unacceptable.
ultimately functioning on the same level, right? This is not even a coach. This is not even the player's coach,
I
right? This is
agree.
a coach of a
It's
different team. So they are not even on the same plane as each other.
an
And
unacceptable, unacceptable thing.
again, the whole thing is fucking capitalism. I get it. And I don't even like that we're having a conversation about this team right now, even bothering talking about them. That's what I'm saying, is because we get nothing out of it.
But
You know, they're
we're
not
not
even
talking
entertaining to
about
watch.
Adrian Hanauer in the roundup. We're talking about the players.
Sure. Okay, fine. I mean, it's true like that. It's basically, you could say that carte blanche with every single team that we cover, because ultimately none of us are cheering for the owners, you know? Like, none of us are sitting back and being like, woo, profits for the owners. That's not part of the conversation. It's an unfortunate byproduct of what happens with sports. Sports are entertaining to watch because players are able to do entertaining and exciting things.
It's not an unfortunate byproduct of what happens with sports. It's an unfortunate byproduct of what happens with capitalism.
Yes, with life.
Anyways, playing against the Whitecaps squad hit hard by illness after their loss to Cruz Azul in the CONCACAF Champions Cup title game. The Sounders fell behind in the 40th minute and then collapsed with red heart cards for both Nuhu and Jonathan Bell early in the second half, reducing them to nine players. With a two-man advantage, Vancouver put two more home in the 70th minute, and then with a penalty in the 88th minute to win 3-0 in, there's already been what's been described as a rock bottom for the Sounders performance-wise this season. Obviously, they're dealing with injuries of their own on the back line, as well as Jordan Morris, as we'll talk about in a second, but this was pretty bad. So Jordan Morris, who's coming back from a hamstring strain, underwent an MRI on Friday that showed that there was a new strain in the hamstring, a setback, out against Vancouver, and likely will not be able to play in the Club World Cup at all. Brian Schmetzer said 7 to 10 weeks. Let's see how that goes. Maybe that's stretched into 2 weeks because we're now going to be triply ultra cautious. So basically, the Sounders have barely had Jordan Morris at all this season. It's tough. Okay, the latest. Days away from the start of the FIFA Club World Cup, the war of words is only growing between MLS and its players over distribution of prize money. On Friday, the owners offered 20% of performance bonuses to players on top of the $1 million they are guaranteed in compensation, meaning the players would get a larger share of the payment for wins or draws in the group stage and teams advancing beyond it. A source told Sounder at Heart that the offer was larger prior to the Sounders protest last week. Players rejected that offer, calling it, quote, retaliatory in nature,
Wait,
and
the
noting,
offer was higher before the protest?
correct, calling it retaliatory in nature, and noting that players still get barely 10% of the standard appearance fees and that 20% performance bonuses remain, quote, below the international
Is this
standard.
just a Sounders issue, or is because
No,
they're the only team?
there's three MLS teams
And they're all
playing.
kind of aligned on this. Is it just the Sounders who
Yeah.
are speaking out about it, or?
It's the only the Sounders who have publicly protested in the way that they did, but the Players Association is behind this all the way without question. So LAFC and Inter Miami are the other teams participating in the Club World Cup. So the Sounders will open the Club World Cup on Sunday, hosting Brazilian club Botafogo, which qualified by winning Copa Libertadores last year. They also won the Brazilian Serie A Campeonato for the first time since 1995, having only returned to the league in 2022 after a year in Serie B during a debt crisis. Currently sixth in the league table, albeit with the third best goal differential. And they're led by a familiar name and longtime RSL winger, Jefferson Savarino, who had 8 goals and 7 assists last year in league play. Seattle Reign FC went on the road and ended the
When you were
season.
saying that the prices are going down for these games,
Oh yeah,
for these matches,
the tickets are not selling at all,
do you
particularly
think
for the
that
Botafogo match.
it is that a byproduct of this conversation, or are people just not interested?
I think it's more that people are not interested. I mean, I personally am, not really interested in giving money to the Sounders organization even though, I mean, it's not directly to them. FIFA is the one selling the tickets, but it's not exciting to me. Like, might I still go with secondhand tickets? Possibly, but it definitely decreases my interest in it too.
I mean, the tickets aren't like crazy cheap. $46 is the cheapest ticket.
For which match?
Botafogo.
Well, I was told there was 25, but they also sent season ticket holders who had previously purchased tickets two free ones to this match. So,
Oh, I hope it's a disaster. Let me ask. I don't know if the players could withstand this. Do you think MLS could withstand a strike? Or does the league fold?
I doubt the league would fold. The franchises are reasonably valuable at this point. I do think it would cause a significant decrease in fan interest.
I'm so absurdly cheering against the Sounders right now.
I get it. I don't necessarily agree, but I get it.
You don't agree from the perspective of we should still cheer for the players.
Correct. Seattle Reign FC went on the road and ended the San Diego Waves' six-game unbeaten streak with an impressive 2-1 win on Friday night. They got the first ever goal from Seattle native and Roosevelt product Sally Menti, who was making her first career start as part of a short-term contract, and then the game winner from Emery Adames in the 87th minute after Delphine Cascarino scored the equalizer for San Diego. Reign tied for fifth in the NWSL standings ahead of Saturday's visit to the struggling Chicago Stars, who are tied for last in the league with 5 points and have an ugly minus 16 goal differential. All right, Seattle Storm update. Well, we recorded last Wednesday, so they've only played once since then, had a little bit of a break. They played Saturday at Phoenix, a tight game through the first 3.5 quarters that they pulled away late. A lot of Skylar Diggins in the second half after Gabby Williams carried them with 18 points in the first half. Another tough night for Neco Gumeke, but they changed the starting lineup, which wasn't a huge surprise. Erica Wheeler moved into the starting five. Alicia Clark back to the bench, where I think she can potentially fit a little bit better, and got playing a banged up Phoenix team that was without their one of their stars, Alyssa Thomas, got the win that they needed to on the road, improving to 5-4. And it's amazing, things are wide enough open in the WNBA right now after the Minnesota Lynx and New York Liberty, who are both undefeated, that they moved all the way up to third in the
Wow.
Athletic's power rankings, which still feels aggressive to me, but I get it. And beating Phoenix in combination with Las Vegas losing by about 1 million points to the Golden State Valkyries on Saturday afternoon on ABC produced a situation where the Storm are now second in the WNBA Commissioner's Cup standings in the Western Conference at 2-1 and hosting the top-ranked 3-0 Minnesota Lynx on Wednesday. It's basically a must-win for them to have a chance to win the West. But if the Storm could beat the Lynx, and they did play them competitively on the road last week, you'll recall. They would just need, or 2 weeks ago, I guess that was, would just need a Las Vegas Aces loss to be in the driver's seat, entering their final two games at Golden State and at LA. If they won out and Vegas loses at least once and they still have to play the Lynx, then the Storm would be assured a spot in the Commissioner's Cup title game for the second time in its history. So, a lot on the line Wednesday night. I'm very excited to see the Lynx and see this matchup. Saturday night's going to be the first ever matchup with the expansion Golden State Valkyries, who have been frisky. They're 4-5 in their inaugural season, have won two in a row coming off that blowout of the Aces at home and an overtime win at the LA Sparks. Very good news for the Storm, who you'll recall hold the Sparks first round pick. But they will be limited in this one by Eurobasket with the departures of starters Janelle Salon and Cecilia Zondalassini, who already missed those previous two games, as well as key reserve Julie Van Lo.
So the Sparks are fully not in the playoffs right now.
No, they're off to a very poor start. Now, they will get Cameron Brink back at some point. That will help them a lot because, as dangerous as their starting lineup has been offensively, with Ajoree Stevens' ability to, play five out, play as a stretch five, her and De'Arica Hamby, their versatility in the front court, and then Kelsey Plum, the dynamism that she's bringing in the back court. But even with that, they've struggled defensively. They've only got a minus 1.6 differential. They have a better differential than Golden State. Also remarkably better than the Aces, who are at 4-3, but have suffered a couple of blowouts. But certainly good news for the Storm that they are out of playoff position right now, because especially with the 2-year record, Connecticut at 2-7 has the worst point differential through 9 games in WNBA history at minus 17.4 points per game. But they made the playoffs last year. It's going to be hard for them to go below LA in the 2-year record if the Sparks miss the playoffs and are in the lottery.
Are there teams that are confidently below, like the Wings? Are they confidently?
I think the Sky are the most confident. Sky and Sun are the most confidently below them, I would say. Dallas,
As far as
one.
2-year record goes?
Oh, well, but I think Dallas is going to. Well, they had a very similar record to the Sparks last year. There wasn't much separation among the lawn playoff teams. So Sky will probably finish with the worst 2-year record at this point. They don't, by the way, own
Just
their.
because of how bad they are? Oh, the Sky, not the Sun.
Yes.
Okay.
By the way, they do not own their first round pick outright. The Minnesota Lynx hold their first round pick.
Oh my God. It's just wait till they draft Darko.
Oh, that's a good one. So I think the Wings are better than they've played thus far. They're 1-9, but Paige Bueckers has missed the last 4 games. First a concussion, now illness. She is due back, return to the lineup on Wednesday.
Ugh.
I don't know that they would pass the Sparks, but I'm not yet confident they're behind them.
You ever just miss the feeling of the Red Lion Hotel in the summertime right before the boat races?
Yes.
Like the smell of the Red Lion somehow, like
Well, not
it
that
just.
part of it, no.
There really is nothing like sitting at that Continental breakfast, just looking out over the pool and over the Columbia River at that Red Lion. And that's in, is that in Richland or is that
It's in
in,
Richland.
okay, in Richland, Washington? It is just a beautiful thing. That barbecue place.
Well, I'm excited to try it. We're not going to be there for the races, but we will be there shortly after.
We're going to Pasco, though, right?
No, I think, yeah, but we'll be close enough. We're
Okay,
on the
fair
same
enough.
side of the river. I believe we're going to Kennewick.
Oh, we're going to Kennewick. I don't know if I've ever been to Kennewick.
I think at some point you have been. That's
I've
where the
definitely.
actual hydroplane race, the pits are in Kennewick, I'm pretty sure.
I don't think I've ever been to the pits in Tri-Cities.
I have been there. That does bring up last weekend was the H1 Unlimited season opener
Hello.
in Guntersville, Alabama.
You said we didn't have any toasts.
Well, there was no winner. The winner of the weekend was high wind and afternoon thunderstorms,
It always
which
is.
canceled the day schedule
High wind.
on Sunday. But the most notable event was a pretty wild flip by Dave Vilwalk in the U27.
The most wild thing is that Dave Vilwalk is still driving a hydroplane.
Yeah, he did was last year too.
How old is Dave Vilwalk?
How old is Dave Vilwalk? Great question.
It's like I keep
71.
getting older and Dave Vilwalk stays the same age.
71.
Oh my God.
He is not much younger than Jan. He's not getting any hydroplanes right now or ever.
Yet.
You think so? It somehow managed to blow over, like basically right in front of some boats that were beside it. Because it was in the inside lane, the Miss Apollo, and right behind others that passed underneath it was pretty wild looking. But thankfully, everybody okay. The boat probably going to need some time, I would say, for repairs after that one. But again, that's the most important thing that everyone's okay.
Okay,
All right.
we could go back to talking about other sports now. I don't even want to talk about sports. I'm just really pining for that. Just being crazy in the pool and, like one by one getting every single other family to leave. It's the Carcino classic, right?
It's hard to do that when you have an Airbnb with a private pool. You can't achieve the same thing.
I know.
All right. Well, despite it being June, there's UW men's basketball news because they
Hello.
have added another starter via transfer in USC's Desmond Claude, who's heading into his final season of eligibility. Basically, the last notable player left uncommitted as a transfer this offseason. And ended up after, being linked to several of the highest profile teams in the country, including the defending champions, Florida, at UW, reuniting him with Quincy Pondexter and with Wesley Yates III, who started alongside him on the way at guard at USC last year. Claude averaged 16.6 points as a sophomore at Xavier before transferring to the Trojans, averaged 15.8 points, 4.2 assists last season, starting all but one game. Was probably a bit stretched in terms of playmaking on a USC team without a traditional point guard. He led the Trojans in assists, but also averaged 3.5 turnovers per game. So I think having another ball handler in Kwamari Peterson should be helpful for him. But he did score with above average efficiency for the first time, despite his large 27.5% usage rate, making 53% of his twos, getting the foul line nearly six times per game. Has historically been a Husky killer. He's played against them three times and averaged 21.3 points and 5.7 assists. Big question will be his development as a shooter, having hit 31% of his threes last season, 27% for his NCAA career, 75% foul shooter, which suggests some upside beyond the arc. So you're presumably now looking at Claude and Wesley Yates III starting on the wings, which would push Zoom Diallo to a reserve role between them and Kwamari Peterson on the perimeter. But you look at the talent that they've added in the front court, bringing back Frank Kepnong. It's an NCAA tournament caliber team. Huskies finished sixth in the transfer rankings by my ESPN colleague Jeff Barzello. It's really like
You okay over there? You all right? I can fill for a little while.
you have it. Yeah, you have it. I mentioned in the Discord, like the shift from where we were at the end of the season. And, my not buying Danny Sprinkle's argument that the late start was the reason that they didn't put together a strong enough roster last year. Well, amusingly, the team that I pointed to is, well, this coach came in late and still put together a better roster than you did, was Eric Musselman at USC, where two of his biggest transfers were Desmond Claude and Wesley Yates III. And
The only
now they
thing he
are
did
at
wrong
UW.
was not bring back Quincy.
I don't know what went into that decision. Obviously, there's longer term concerns at play than your roster next season, but
Are there? Let me just ask the question. Are there? Like that.
no, that's a very fair question.
Because this is a different NCAA basketball than it's ever been. Like, do you build programs anymore? You could kind of have
Probably not.
history of success, but things change very, very quickly. I mean, obviously we understand why St. John's is number one in these transfer rankings, and it's a little bit more of like reputation of the coach. But as far as like programs go overall, I mean, there are a few blue bloods that are almost always probably going to be fairly good, but the whole climate is so radically different. And I guess the way that I would view it is, there's actually a difference in basketball versus football. Being six in transfer rankings in football would be good. Being six in transfer rankings in basketball is that's your whole roster. We're talking about one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight players. And they're bringing back two of the best players from last year's roster. And you see that they're the second ranked team in the Big Ten in the transfer rankings. Like I would view this as obviously there are good players around the country. Not just this is all potential. Things need to happen. Players need to play together. Players are going to be here's what I'll say. I think transfer portal rankings are going to be inflated because players who are highly ranked out of the portal may be coming off of better seasons than they might have in the future. So that's a thing that is hard to predict. A lot of these players kind of are all operating around the same territory. The players that Indiana got or Oklahoma got, even USC is number nine ranked here. So USC is not, terribly different.
Well, it's
And it
also
kind of.
the more talent you lose, the more in this case, salary cap, frankly, you have to go out and get new players
But
and minutes.
the good thing for the UW was they didn't have very good players to begin with. So
True.
they were able to, like I like Tyler Harris, but if Zoom Diallo is not starting, that is a great place for Zoom Diallo to be right now. Like him having to be, we saw it last year as a freshman, him having to be the guy down the stretch, he just wasn't ready for it in those moments. So being able to come in, kind of have heat check moments, help contribute to offense when they need it, and do a little microwave stuff for Zoom, I think is exactly where he should be, and he can grow into that role. And what who knows? Maybe it won't be at UW, right? But to me, being six is not like this is an NCAA tournament team. This is a team that, hypothetically speaking, all goes right, should be near the top of the Big Ten overall. So
I'm not quite ready to get there. I think optimistically you could say back into the top 25 to also receiving votes going into the season.
That's fine.
It's fine. That would be amazing.
The work now is on Danny Sprinkle, which it was beforehand also, but like it's on the coaching staff to now take talent and turn it into a basketball team. And yeah. I think that's what some of these other coaches, Rick Pitino is not a great coach because of the recruiting and the reputation that is helpful, but he has consistently proven that he's able to take players and turn them into a basketball team. And I think that's what Danny Sprinkle did at Utah State. And that's what Danny Sprinkle didn't do last year.
But he didn't, to your point, he didn't have the pieces that he needed to put together the basketball
Probably.
Team.
And the team underperformed.
It underperformed to a degree, but he, you know, they were not ranked, picked that highly or ranked that high, projected that highly coming in. And look, he recognized it and he went out and did controlled what he could control this offseason. And the other thing I like about it is I think the pieces generally fit together. Like Desmond Claude is not a great three-point shooter, you know, and ideally he improves to close to average this year. But you look at the starting five, you've got three guys who shot better than 40% from three around him in Wesley Yates, Kamari Peterson, who I think is the one guy you could look at as sort of that was last year an outlier. He shot 42% from three.
Oh, I think Kamari Peterson's going to be a dog. Kamari Peterson is the player who I'm, like Wesley Yates, yes. I am most excited for Kamari Peterson out of any of these players.
I think he's going to be great, but he shot 42% from three. He was at 29% the year before that and did not make a single three in four games in 2021-22. So we'll see. He, you know, only a 72% free throw shooter.
So the odds of him being 40% plus low. Because you're going from East Tennessee State to the Big Ten.
I mean, I don't think that's the primary reason. I think it's regression to the mean is the primary reason. But again,
both of
those things, he's a capable three-point shooter. And Ignacevic is a 40% plus three-point shooter at the four. Wesley Yates over 40% in his freshman season at USC. So that's exciting to have that around a guy like Desmond Claude. And then, you know, obviously a lot of this is going to be dependent on Frank Kepnong staying healthy. They've recruited some capable depth behind him in Lathan Somerville as, you know, someone who will also be.
I would chalk it up to you can't count on Frank Kepnong being healthy.
Like, I agree that they are not counting on that.
And but, I can tell you we are not the only people who are aware of that information. Danny Sprinkle is also aware of that information.
But what Frank Kepnong is the difference between, okay, this team is, you know, a fringe NCAA tournament team, and like this team is a team that can win games in the NCAA tournament. So
I mean, there's another piece that five of the top 10 teams in Jeff Borzello's transfer rankings are from the Big Ten. So there's going to be a lot of talent in the Big Ten. There's going to be good freshman talent in the Big Ten. It's just going to be a talented league, which is great. That's what we want ultimately overall. But it's pretty exciting seeing this much energy. And granted, nobody's talking about it really right now.
No.
But it's going to be a thing that as the season gets going and as time passes, we get closer to it, people are going to start getting excited about Husky basketball. And
as we've talked about, they need it, because if you as a basketball program are not on the radar right now, and we talked about it at the start of this pod, the possibility that within 3 years there could be the Sonics back in Seattle. Like if it doesn't happen now, it might not ever happen for Danny Sprinkle. So there's a lot on the line.
Oh, I thought you were comparing the two and saying that the Huskies need to be successful and establish themselves before the Sonics get here. Because I think the Sonics
I was saying.
No, I think the Sonics being here. Look, maybe it's not Danny Sprinkle. Who knows, right? I guess there's two parts to this, which is the Huskies are providing Danny Sprinkle with the resources that a coach would need to have a successful college basketball program at the University of Washington.
Without question.
And there aren't that many teams ahead of them. And I think the thing that we've seen with college basketball is, look, there are a couple of big programs, but it's a little different than football, where there's just such a gravity up to these like classic programs necessarily, but it's not quite the same. with basketball, where it's just like you do good here, you go there. I think it's the type of program that, and the infrastructure that UW has built, and the resources that they're giving him, means that he could stick around as well if things work. But having an NBA team in Seattle elevates the college basketball team in Seattle, in my opinion. I don't think it's a coincidence necessarily that basically the second that the Sonics moved, Husky basketball kind of faded to obscurity for a couple of decades.
No, that's not an accurate timetable at all.
I mean, how much longer was UW basketball good after? How many NCAA tournaments did you like? They had a couple of years in there, like later Lorenzo Romar, and then like a Hopkins year, whatever. But there weren't that many successful seasons
Yeah,
after the Sonics moved.
I don't think the Sonics moved. It's not like the Sonics moved and then all of a sudden everything fell apart.
I'm not saying that they're
Also,
necessarily
they weren't
correlated.
that good for most of the time that the Sonics were here. Fun fact.
Having professional basketball in the city is still helpful for the college program in the city
I definitely
to
think it
be.
has some benefits, particularly in terms of like ex sons of Sonics. Donald
No,
Watts like was our guy, when we were getting into
there's you just build
men's
a little
basketball.
bit more of, and like Seattle's been
But there
pretty good
wasn't
at
the same
this.
competition in the 1990s or even in the 2000s for your like Seattle sports fan attention and dollar that there is now. Like
But the
we
good
just
thing, we know the money is endless because they're telling us with these signings that the money is endless.
Oh,
And it's not because
they
people
have
are buying tickets to Husky
of
basketball
course
games.
they have the whale who's funding this, but still to have a home court advantage to be relevant within the Seattle market, you need people coming out to your games. And we just talked about there's an expansion, PWHL franchise that's going to be playing in the winter. There's an NHL franchise that wasn't here when the Sonics were here. The Sonics, the Storm, are a different force in the Seattle sports market than they were. The Sounders were never here when the Sonics were here. The Rain were never here when the Sonics were here. It's a very different sports landscape than it was 17 years
I'm
ago.
going
And
to
I.
give this a whoopty fucking do, right? Like UCLA has managed to have a pretty successful program for the last
UCLA has a
60 years.
successful program. It is not a really notable thing within the LA sports community.
I think it's
And
still
also,
pretty
LA is
helpful.
just a much larger city.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a trillion sports teams.
But there's not
The
really that many more
more
sports teams than
unique thing
Seattle.
is that a lot of major cities don't, like, Big Ten schools aren't in major cities. That's part of why they wanted the University of Washington. And I don't know why they chose the other school, but I can understand three out of the four,
I think you
but
do understand why.
I understand. Yeah. They just wanted a track school that's not even fast. Confusing. But there aren't, like, when you look at the Big Ten across the board, they're not necessarily in major cities.
That's why Northwestern is the sports power.
I mean, it's a little bit. I mean, Illinois is outside of Chicago, but Illinois should be better than they are
How
at
far do you
sports.
think the Champaign, Illinois is from Chicago?
It's like an hour.
Going to give that a we'll see. Okay. I wish I knew what the
2 hours.
arena.
It's 2 hours. It's a little bit further.
Okay. I mean, that's like Portland to Oregon,
Yeah, I
basically.
guess that is a little bit further. But Northwestern's not going to be a competitor. All right, I guess I'll accept that Illinois. But that's kind of my point, though, is
Yeah, no, I think it is a fair point.
that these most of the schools in the Big
I
Ten are
mean,
not
Michigan
these.
and
It's
Michigan State are much closer to Detroit than the University of Illinois is to Chicago.
just Chicago's a much more important city than Detroit is.
Again, the proximity matters more. Like you're not having you don't probably there's not necessarily that many people who live in Chicago and have University of Illinois men's basketball or women's basketball season tickets in the same way that you could at Michigan or Michigan State if you lived in Detroit.
I mean, it's going to be a thing that's going to continue benefiting UW overall. And I think that's part of it, where it's like when you look at all these schools, there aren't those NBA teams there. You know, there isn't that necessarily like infrastructure. Northwestern being obviously in a major city, but it's such a radically different college and
Yes.
universe. You know, like if you were redoing the Big Ten, Northwestern ain't in it. So that's just kind of a reality of the program. So I don't know. I think it'll help them. I actually do not buy. I don't buy your competition thing ever. I think that I don't think people's attention is as divided by things. I think people's attention happens when things are good. And UW basketball hasn't been that good, but you also have to be good for a period of time to build a fan base. And the Husky basketball outside of the early 2000s just hasn't had a consistent run. So of course the fan base is small.
Yeah.
But the fact is they're spending on it because the money is endless.
But the money has nothing to do with the athletic department specifically. That's the thing I want to make clear.
What do you mean? How do you figure?
I mean, it's just one rich guy is behind this.
Who is spending the money?
I've forgotten the name.
So there's just one guy who's NILing it up for UW,
Yeah.
specifically
And
basketball,
so,
or
yes. And Desmond Claude, by the way, the reason he had to sign on Friday was it's like the NIL agreements all change after the House settlement was approved, which happened Friday night. So don't ask me to explain the actual like math behind this or the rules behind it, but it was important that he signed before the settlement went into effect. So.
like I said, we always love programs that just one guy is supporting.
I guess we could have toasted to this. The Seattle
Yeah.
Seahawks signed Michael Dixon to a reported 4-year, $16.2 million extension, again
This
making
is the
him
thing that we could have toasted to, signing a punter?
the highest paid punter in the NFL.
Cool.
I mean, good for Michael Dixon.
Good for Michael Dixon.
Good for Michael Dixon.
We could have toasted to Desmond Claude.
Yeah, but we had a whole discussion about that. I don't really have a lot of analysis of the Michael Dixon extension.
My analysis is if you're making a punter the highest paid player in the NFL, you're doing it wrong.
I'm sure that's true, but
Michael Dixon is great. This is not a personal indictment on Michael Dixon. It's just
no, of course not.
John Schneider's just, you're bad at this guy. You're just bad at this. I'm sorry. Like, the you got really lucky for a period of time, and everything else, every other decision that John Schneider has made has pretty much been wrong. But he drafted Russell Wilson 13 years ago and Bobby Wagner.
We can only hope he gets lucky again.
Seahawks are on there. I like their social media loves Jalen Milroe, which I get, I understand why they do. And I will also say it's a little dangerous territory. The amount that they're like promoting Jalen Milroe, it's like Milroe to cup. And it's like, and granted, no, like it's not gonna, people complaining that like if Sam Darnold does bad and Jalen Milroe doesn't come in, or Jalen Milroe comes in and is bad, there's no actual repercussion, right? It's just a thing. They're just looking for clicks or whatever. They're looking for people to be talking at the team at all in June. But I think that we are setting ourselves up for a very rude awakening on Jalen Milroe's Seahawks tenure right now. But I hope to be wrong. I hope desperately to be wrong. I hope that he's an amazing quarterback. I honestly, the best thing that could happen is Jalen Milroe beats Sam Darnold this year, because that would mean that he is a fucking amazing quarterback. But not feeling super confident about that happening. And the amount that it's like he is on their socials and that they're excited about promoting Milroe and having like a rookie quarterback is, it's a lot. And I think there's going to be people who, Darnold's gonna have a bad game and the dialogue is gonna be so annoying.
This is on Instagram. I mean, obviously, and you can just like rest assured that in any situation, the dialogue is going to be so annoying. But
Look, base level, the dialogue's going to be annoying. They drafted a rookie quarterback. That just ramps that up to 11.
11 is one louder. Michael Dixon, also a member of the Seahawks top 50 players, as they prepare to celebrate their 50th season. Alongside Jason, oh, no, not alongside Jason Myers, alongside John Ryan, two punters,
Oh my
no
God.
kickers.
It's fucking dumb. No, it's
I mean,
fine. You got to punt the ball.
John Ryan also.
Did Pete Carroll make the list?
Well,
not make the list as a top 50 player.
Choose the
did
list,
he
yes.
did he choose the list? Oops, all punters and running backs.
Actually, that many running backs, all things considered. I mean, there's, you know, four of them plus two fullbacks. But
think about how good of a player you had to have been. Like, if you're the 49th best player in Seahawks history, you're still an incredibly good NFL player,
yeah.
right? And you're like, I didn't make this list because a punter made it.
I mean, John Ryan does have one of the most notable completions in Seahawks history.
There you go.
Say that.
That's why he's on there.
You know who didn't make it?
Who didn't make it?
Jermaine Kearse.
I'm sorry, what?
I mean, I don't know that Jermaine Kearse should make this list, but you want to talk about some of the most amazing moments in franchise history.
I was going to say he is the most important catch, barring whatever happened the next week, 2 weeks after.
Is that even the most important catch?
I mean, he had in back-to-back weeks that season two of the most important catches in Seahawks history.
No, I was saying the touchdown against the 49ers in that NFC Championship game.
Did he have the go-ahead touchdown?
I'm pretty sure he did.
It was Kearse. I don't remember that catch.
It was the fourth down play where Jason Myers, or not Jason Myers, who was the kicker at that point? Steven Hauschka, who also did not make the list, said he said not to kick it and to go for it. And they threw a touchdown on fourth down. That was Jermaine Kearse. I'm remembering this correctly, right? Jermaine Kearse scored a touchdown in like an extremely high percentage of the number of playoff games that he ever played in.
And two punters made this list. That's what you're telling me. How many touchdowns in the Super Bowl does Jermaine Kearse have to score to make this list when it's like, well, he...
Who is the receiver who had the huge game in the Super Bowl and then
Chris Matthews?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah. Kearse scored the go-ahead touchdown, 35-yard pass from Russell.
Go-ahead touchdown, and he won an NFC Championship game, and scored the go-ahead touchdown in a previous NFC Championship game, and had the catch that basically should have won them another Super Bowl. And meanwhile, they're like not one punter, but two punters on this list.
I asked on the Discord whether we should do a Pelton Cast Top 50, which then turned into a bunch of jokes about what the Pelton Cast Top 50 would be, whether it would be Top 50 Abandoned Searches, Top 50
I want to eat cookies,
hot
too.
Takes. Look, we attempted to eat cookies last Thursday. Our plans were thwarted.
The other... I'm just... It's not a coincidence that the types of players that punters happen to be and the fans that happen to rally around punters and that punters happen to be on this list.
There's a certain kicker that they were big fans of. He did not make the list.
Did any kickers make the list?
No kickers made it.
Two punters, but no kickers.
Jermaine Kearse did not score a touchdown in Super Bowl 49 before it was canceled.
Well, I mean, he had the catch though.
I know. I understand. I'm aware. I watched the game right up until that moment. They came on the field and we're like, no more. All right.
It's fucking dumb. Whatever. Who cares?
That's why we should come up with our own
list. Anyway. Yeah, but our list will be stupid too. Lists are dumb.
Wow.
Lists are a boring and convenient way to talk about things.
Created content for engagement.
That's literally all it is.
On that note.
You're welcome for all the content we gave to you this week. Thanks for listening.
Jerry DePoto said, "We're doing you a favor." Actually,
it's 11:54 right now. Also, so not lost on me.
People were very excited about the fact that Dan Wilson has now won 54% of his first 100 games as Mariners manager. Also, I made the wrong joke. It was actually the Zlatan full page ad. You're welcome.
Well, another classic. Well, no, today I was just like, I don't feel a type of way. But then, you know what? I worked myself into, literally in my head, I was like, I don't feel a type of way. It's nice out. I'm chilling. Everything's fine. And then in like 2 minutes, I worked myself up to angry at capitalism.
understandably so. So I was looking at Chewbacca
Oh yeah,
earlier.
the Wookiee from the planet Kashyyyk.
Correct. First off, you know what is a genius idea? I'm sure they've already had this.
What?
Also, I could just pass it along. I do work for Disney. Baby Chewie.
Baby Chewbacca.
Yeah. But what actually happened is that my wife noted that Chewbacca looks a lot like a Sasquatch. And then I got to tell the story of the time that my friend Matt wore a Chewbacca outfit in a Sonics uniform to an Oklahoma City game in Portland with a sign that said homeless for Squatch. So that was a
That
fun trip down memory lane.
your baby Chewbacca idea is not a good idea.
Oh, what do you
It's
mean?
just the idea they already
Yeah,
had with baby
I
Yoda.
don't know if you're aware of it. That's how IP works, baby.
You're like, what about you
You
loved baby Yoda?
know, from the people that brought you Baby Yoda.
Just wait till you get a hold of baby Chewbacca, baby Greedo.
Oh
Oops,
no.
all baby Star Wars.
I mean, they did do that with the Muppets. It's actually not the worst idea.
Maybe it is the worst idea. I was thinking about IP earlier and just how badly the Star Wars like 789 got so fucked up IP wise.
I is a Disney employee. I think Star Wars 7, 8, and 9
Sorry.
were terrific.
The excellent films released by the fine people at Disney, Star Wars episodes 7, 8, and 9, like they were just a mess. You know what I mean? There wasn't like the cohesion, and then but they really the only idea was let's do the idea again. And it's a little crazy to me that people can't figure out one slightly different idea.
I think people could figure out the slightly different ideas. I don't think that's the issue.
You think I do you think it got notes to death?
I don't wish to. First off, there's a lot of information out there about the making of
Okay.
episode 7 through 9. People,
I was actually
it
thinking
is
about
readily available.
there's like I was watching TBS, this is exactly the rewatchables, and like Avengers Endgame was on, and I was like reading the Wikipedia about it, and I was like, this shit is so fucking complicated right now. There's like so many different pieces of people. Or I was just like, this is like a lot to really be following along with.
This is from the guy who can't even tell Lawrence and Legomena apart. They're both named Casey, right?
sounds like a TV show that you would have liked on TBS
Oh no,
also.
Lawrence and Legomena.
Lawrence and
I'm
Legomena, attorneys at law.
gonna two guys a girl at a pizza place joke the other day. Did
Did you?
not go over well in my household.
Shocking. Probably because whoever you're making it to only knew it as two guys and a girl after it was
Exactly,
rebranded.
yes. Hate it when that happens. Oh, I know. I
Oh.
now I know. This isn't some information about Casey Legomena that's going to make him stand out to you.
What?
Do you know where he attended college? Not there,
Uptown?
Gonzaga.
Okay, a lot of people go to Gonzaga.
I mean, yeah, thousands every year. Weird.
I mean, it's actually a very small school. Like, it's the exact opposite. Okay, so this weekend, because baseball tournament, they were like playing in the semifinals, and the team popped up that they would have been playing in the championship had they won the semifinals. Well, I knew they were going to win. And they're from Olympia. They're called Olympia Baseball Club. And a lot of the like children's teams just like rip off their logos from professional sports teams or colleges or whatever. Like when they played the Whatcom Prep team, it was just the Washington Nationals logo, which I think goes kind of hard.
The script W.
Yeah,
That's not
I'm
bad.
for it. Marco was wearing an Expos shirt and he was just like, what does this say? He was wearing my Expos shirt and I was like, it's my favorite baseball team.
Did
Anyway,
you just sit down and regale him with stories about how good the 94 Expos would have been
oh
if not for
yeah,
the strike?
2.5 hours. I was like, you know Pedro obviously from the Red Sox, but let me tell you about Pedro. I didn't even mention the Dodgers years,
What'd
but
you say? You
the
didn't even mention the perfect game through 9 innings that went into extras. A
logo
seminal, which
for Olympia Baseball Club.
We're about at the anniversary of that because it happened during the College World Series, I'm pretty sure.
Do you want to know whose logo they took?
Well, I'm guessing based on the tone of this conversation that it was the school down south.
And I was like, Lucan, you need, I was like, I have never wanted you to beat a team more than I want you to beat this team. I was like, every other game, new level, Seattle Select, don't care. I'm like, there is one game that you need to win, and it is this one.
What happened in the game?
Just kick their ass.
I guess the wait, was the perfect game that wasn't in 1994
This
or
is more of a
1993?
seminal memory for you than it was for me. Here is, I know you did the takes today, but I in my head I had it because it feels like summertime outside, and I was like, feels like summer outside, thinking about memories from summers of past, fudgesicles, sometimes twin pops, the Mariners losing badly. That's as far as I got.
I mean, he was a reliever for the Dodgers, so it definitely didn't happen with the Dodgers. It's unclear. Was it
Oh,
was
I
this
thought
actually
it was on the Spos, right?
was this actually Ramon Martinez? Oh no, here it is. It was not a perfect game. It was a no hitter. No, this is yeah. He just no. He that's just a no hitter. I don't.
Pathetic.
No hitter through nine
Oh,
innings.
I have an idea.
That went 10. That went
Are
ten
you ready
for
for
six.
it?
Sure.
Baby Pedro.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
I can't wait to reference this on the podcast, and then you explain that I'm referencing something that's going to come after.
Okay, it was 1995. It was June 3rd. So it
Okay.
was around this
Wow.
time of year because I
To
remember that.
happy 30th anniversary and 1 week to this
Precisely.
perfect
Yeah.
game-ish.
Nine perfect innings with nine strikeouts in a scoreless game. Expos pushed across a run in the top of the 10th, but leading off the home frame, Bip Roberts lined a double down the right field line to deny Martinez the 15th perfect game in
Padres?
MLB history. Yep. There you go.
Did
But
anybody
I
else get on, or is it just Bip, or did they pull Pedro after that?
pulled Pedro after that. Mel Rojas came in from the bullpen and locked down the save because obviously, as you told Marco about, John Wetland had already been traded to the Yankees.
Oh, yeah. I was like, well, always remember the Wetland trade. I explained to him, and he was like, why is this your favorite team? And I was like, teams that no longer exist are my favorite teams.
Really is your brand.
I went up and looked at the Steelheads when Noah mentioned how short. Did you hear? You weren't there for this, were you?
No, I wasn't there for Noah
For Noah at all.
at all. I gave him no support. I wasn't
I
there for Noah.
wasn't there for him. He was like, the history of Negro League baseball in Seattle is like pretty short-lived, and the amount of marketing that subsequent white people have gotten out of it
Oh,
is
man.
incredible.
The
This
limit
is
does not exist.
my favorite. The Steelheads played in the West Coast Negro Baseball League and played their first game on June 1st, 1946, against the San Diego Tigers in front of 2,500 fans at Sick's Stadium. Its players included, I love these names, by the way, Cannonball Barry, Nap Gully, Zell Miles, Rogers Pierre, Herb Simpson, and Faye Washington. The league folded after a month of play.
Oh no.
One month! 1 month in 1946.
They don't make baseball nicknames like they
And
used to.
here we are 80 years later, and the Mariners are still branding themselves off of this 1 month of baseball. It's pretty
100%.
incredible.
Yeah. Baby Steelheads.
I mean, wouldn't be against it. Anyway, I just thought that was incredible that this literally 1 month of baseball is what we're talking about after.